Some of you who are good readers of notice sheets might be expecting that it was Rachel who was preaching today. She's preserving her energy as we head towards going on pilgrimage in less than 24 hours, which is very exciting. She will be back, but not today. Last week, there was the smell of bacon in the church, though sadly it didn't linger through from Saturday into Sunday, but it was there. This week, if we were going to have those experimental scratch cards that apparently they've given to some people in cinemas to scratch at the right moment in the film, then our scratch cards would have the smell of barbecuing fish, which would be lovely for some of us and probably not for all of us. Anyway, this is a great reading, actually, for those of us who are heading off soon. This reading is really exciting because in a week's time, we will be on that same water's edge of Galilee, in the place where it's commonly remembered, this story, and we will be having a Jesus meal there, by the side of the Lake Galilee, in the place where Jesus was. It's not quite the fish and bread meal at Holy Communion, but what an amazing thing that we're going to get that opportunity. What a privilege it is. Very exciting. But actually, this is a great story, whether or not you've got that to look forward to. There's some wonderful things about this story. This story has some wonderful details. After Easter, the camera goes into slow motion sometimes and then speeds up again. Mark's gospel, the whole thing seems to be on full speed all the way through. But even Mark slows down sometimes. Luke and John, they just slow the action down. You watch something happening and you get extra details, more than we normally get in our stories. And I love that bit about them. So in this story, we get the names of all the disciples who are in the boat. Well, almost all of them. We get a load of names and two others. But as we know from last week, others rock. So that's fine. We get two others and the names. We get to hear that it was Simon Peter who had the idea to go fishing. Yeah, let's go fishing. And the other said, okay, we'll come too. And we hear that they're out all night and that they don't catch a thing. Nothing. Must have been pretty depressing. But then there's Jesus. But they don't realise it's Jesus. Now, I could pick a bone with the storytelling in the Gospels, actually, because both John and Luke, they tell us it's Jesus before we have to work it out. And they say that nobody else realises, but there's another way of doing the storytelling that we wouldn't know either. So we're not in for a surprise here, but the disciples are in for a surprise because it's Jesus, but they don't realise it yet. Same with Mary Magdalene at the tomb, where she meets Jesus but doesn't realise yet. Same with the Cleopas and the other, as they walked along to Emmaus. They get to meet Jesus but they don't realise it yet. But we don't get surprised because we're told at the beginning. Anyway, it goes something like this. Hello!
Hello!
Have you got any fish?
No, go away.
They said that quieter though, it's not recorded in the biblical account. Throw the net in on the other side.
Who does that person think he is? He doesn't look like a fisherman.
Anyway, this is me, okay? The other side of the boat. I mean, like a boat. For us, it's a thing. We see it. But for a fish in the water, it's just like this little bit of keel. You know, oh, big deal. You know, one side of the boat, the other side of the boat. It's not that different for a fish. You're there. So why would it make any difference if you're on one side of the boat or the other side of the boat? But anyway,
all right then, we've got nothing to lose, we haven't got any fish.
So they throw the net in on the other side and they catch loads. And then Simon and James and John, who are all in the boat this time, not Andrew, for what I'm about to talk about, they look at each other and they think, we have been here before. No fish. And then a non-fisherman says, even though you've been fishing all night, let me tell you what to do. And they decide, all right then. And they throw in the nets and suddenly they get a mega catch. We've been there. We've done that. When was that then? It was when Jesus first called us, thinks John. It is the Lord, he says. And Simon, whose brain's going a bit slow, when was that? When was that? It's Jesus. And he's out of there. He's over the side. He defies all life-saving rules and puts on extra clothing to jump in the water. This is not what you should do at home. And he swims off and the others follow. Actually, I always notice it never says who got there first, because I could quite imagine Peter going, oh, I wish I hadn't put my coat on. And the others are going, and they get past him. Anyway, then we hear about Jesus and the bread and the fish on the barbecue. Lovely stuff. And we hear about Simon, who's asked to go back into the boat. Simon gets into the boat and he gets some fish for Jesus to add to the barbecue. Maybe Jesus had forgotten about the others. Maybe needed a bit more fish. And there are 153 fish. Who remembered 153 fish? It's brilliant. Don't normally get that sort of detail. And the nets don't break. And nobody dares to ask Jesus who he is, because they all know it's Jesus, but they don't quite believe it. And maybe he just was a bit different. But we don't know this about these stories. But wow. You can feel the atmosphere of what's happening in the story. It's wonderful, wonderful. It's a great story. Details are fabulous, and all the disciples must have been amazed and overjoyed. But none more than Simon Peter. Or maybe he was the one who was finding it difficult to be overjoyed, because there was some recent history that had messed things up. Let's go back a long way, because Simon Peter and Jesus have a lot of history together. Simon did seem to manage to make a roller coaster of some of this history as well. Simon was there near the start of Jesus' ministry. We hear that Jesus spent time in Simon's house, and that he healed Simon's mother-in-law. If I had my smilometer, these would be big smiley. I don't know if you've seen my smilometer. Big smiles, good stuff. And then Simon was one of the first to be called by Jesus. Good stuff. And that was straight after the first miraculous catch of fish that they've just remembered in this story. Good stuff. And Jesus says, follow me at that point. But actually that wasn't before Simon had grabbed hold of Jesus' feet and said, go away from me because I'm a sinful man. So kind of made that a bit more complicated. But anyway, Simon did follow. And Simon was the only one to get to walk on water. Yes! And Simon was the only one to fall dramatically into the water. But he did it. He started it. Simon was the first one to recognize that Jesus was the Messiah. But just minutes later, he started trying to stop Jesus doing what Jesus had come to do. No, you mustn't do that, he says. And Jesus has to say, get behind me, Satan. So it's up and it's down and it's up and it's down. This is Simon's story with Jesus. And Simon gets told by Jesus, you are Peter. Peter means rock. And on this rock, I'm going to build my church. That is fantastic. And then Peter had denied him. That denial, that failure that had happened just as Jesus was sentenced to death, just as he was being tried, just as when maybe he needed the most support from his friends. It must have been festering in Peter's whole sense of himself. He had claimed so much earlier on that evening. He had said, even if all these rest deny you, I will stick with you. And he failed. He failed spectacularly. He didn't just deny Jesus once. He denied Jesus three times. And in Luke's gospel, we hear that just at that moment, as the cock crowed, Jesus turned and looked at Peter. And Peter looked at Jesus. And that was the last look that we hear about between Jesus and Peter before Jesus was crucified. And Peter knows that he has just totally, totally let Jesus down. And since then, he must have had to face himself. He's heard his own voice so full of confidence. Even if they all fail, I'll succeed. And he's reflected on his actions that completely failed to match up with his words. He's let Jesus down. He's disappointed. He probably expects that Jesus is disappointed, surely. Peter feels like a complete failure as a disciple, And maybe that's why he's encouraged all the others to go out fishing. I've messed up as a disciple, can't do this stuff. I'm going back to something I know I can do, which is fishing. And then they're out all night without catching anything, but we won't go there. But when they realise it's Jesus on the shore, and I'm sure the boat full of them realised it at the same time, it was Peter who jumps out straight away. He doesn't want to leave things like they are. It's brave of him, but he leaps out and makes his way towards Jesus. And then Peter gets his own part of the story in the second part of our reading, after breakfast, because Jesus doesn't want to leave things like this either. But Jesus doesn't start with a dressing down for Peter. He just talks to his friend, Simon, son of John. Do you love me more than these? Why more than these? Is that what Jesus requires of him, to love him more than these do? I don't think so. Or is it that Jesus is remembering Peter's own words? Even if all of these let you down, I won't let you down. Well, Peter is not so full of himself now. He keeps it simple. You know I love you. That's what he says. And three times he says it, like the three times that he denied Jesus just before Jesus was crucified. And Peter is freed. He's reinstated. It's made good. It turns out that Peter is not defined by his now shattered expectations of himself. He's defined by what Jesus sees in him. And Jesus uses the image of a shepherd. We just heard from Ezekiel, a passage which many of us will find is familiar, or the gist of it certainly. Actually, people in Peter's time, Jesus' time, they would have known that passage very well. And they would have put so much hope into that passage. Peter is being asked to feed Jesus' sheep, to be part of the shepherding. And for the people of Israel, the image of God as the shepherd who would put everything right was a wonderful, hopeful, joyful image. And for Peter to be given a part of that to do himself, wow, that was so, so significant. He is going to become part of the tending of the people of God. That is God's greatest concern. Peter is part of that mission. He's no longer defined by failure, but by his love for Jesus and by Jesus' invitation to him. And in fact, at the very end, Jesus says again the words which he had said way back there when he first called Peter. He says, "Follow me." And so Peter and his call are both restored. Simon Peter is so encouraging for us. He fluffed things so often and so much. He failed. He lets Jesus down. He talks big and then falls flat. Whatever we might define ourselves by that is destructive or hopeless, Peter's been there, but he didn't stay there, and we don't have to either. Jesus says to us, "Do you love me?" And all we need to say is, "You know that I love you." And when we say that, we're not having to say, "And I'm going to get it right all the time." That's not what we say when we say, "You know that I love you." We're just saying, "You know it's me, and you know that I love you. Somewhere in here, deep down, I love you." And we don't have to have got it all right before either. We know that. We might be coming right now from a time of complete failure, completely letting God down. But God is still reaching out to us. He still sees the good in us, as he saw the rock and the shepherd in Peter, who had denied that he even knew Jesus. What it took was honesty. Yes, I do love you. No, I'm not going to try and make it sound bigger and bolder than it is, but I do love you. And as Jesus can use Peter, so he can use us. Just look at Peter and be encouraged. But like Peter, we might need courage to step into God's call, whatever part of life that might be in. Like Peter, we might need to look at things differently. Throw your net on the other side. Are you turning to follow Jesus for the first time? Are you hearing his call to you in some new part of your life that you haven't followed his call in before? Are you coming back from a time of failure and disappointment? Look to Jesus. He loves you. And simply tell him that you love him, and he will restore you, and he will lead you, and he will commission you for his work, because we are all called by Jesus. And we're all different. All saints, all sorts, is what we've been saying recently. Jesus calls us to different things because he knows us. He knows we're different. He doesn't need us to be full of confidence. We don't have to have a perfect track record. He just needs us to love him and to dare to step out towards him, or for him, with him. Like the battered down Simon Peter, who was still the first to get out of the boat, we just need to do something. And Jesus says to each of us, as he said to Simon Peter, follow me. And I hope that we will all have the courage to follow him today. Amen.